Good afternoon, morning, evening, whenever it is you may be tuning into this next edition of the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated Podcast. I am your host, Matt Minnick, as always joined by Michael Rogner. It's been a little while. I think it's our first podcast of 2021. Michael, has the year started better for you than 2020?
Well, it'd be hard to be worse than 2020. So I think we're doing good. And coming off of, you know, the blowout win of NC State and then beating North Carolina, it's, yeah, things, especially in the basketball world, are going really well.
I would agree. And college football season sort of mercifully ended. I don't know. I had sort of checked out. I don't even know if I watched a complete bowl game, but my Green Bay Packers are moving on to the NFC Championship game. And to your point, Florida State basketball is playing a lot better in 2021 than perhaps they ended 2020 playing. If you'll recall, I think the last game of 2020 was a hard fought, but sort of thorough loss to Clemson. I mean, Clemson kind of controlled that game throughout. But Florida State had that long break, had the COVID pause, missed a game against Duke, missed a game against Pitt, who, by the way, is looking really good, and missed a game against Syracuse. I feel like we maybe would have gone 2-1 against those teams, but nonetheless, all three were missed. I don't know that any will be rescheduled, and picked it back up earlier in the week against NC State, with rather a historic performance.
Yeah, that game, you know, I don't even know what to say about that game. It was such an outlier that it was Florida State's the best, you know, the best offensive performance that Florida State's had in 20 years or 21 years, however long advanced stats have been around.
Right.
And if you look at other games, other programs like Gonzaga and Duke and North Carolina that have historically good offenses, it also would have been, you know, in like the top two or three of all of their games. So it was just a crazy one-off where we made everything. And it was certainly fun to watch. I wish there would have been another 20 minutes to play in that game.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know how much is worth breaking down from the game. I think we could why don't we do this? Maybe we talk about the NC State game and the UNC game, sort of combined, to see if we can pull out some trends maybe as we went 2-0 over the Tobacco Road foes this week. But it was historic. I mean, it's not, and it didn't come against an out-of-conference team where, you know, I don't know, it's hard to put that kind of performance into perspective. I think when I knew that this was a different kind of night was in the first half. Nate Jack kind of comes off a screen, it curls around a screen, catches and shoots from probably 26 feet out, but and it all happens all in one motion, and the ball just, you know, rips the nets, and sort of like, oh, that's not as common as we've seen, particularly midway through the first half. I don't know, when did you start feeling like this is a different kind of night?
Well, we started, I think NC State had the lead. It was like 9-8 or something like that. So the first 5 minutes of the game was just kind of back and forth. And then you look up and it's 24-13. You're like, what happened? Mm-hmm. And the rest of the night, it just continued on. So I think it was that first early run you expect, not to get ahead to the North Carolina game, but you kind of expect one team to make a run and then the other team to make a run. And Florida State made their run in the first half, and then NC State just never responded and just got buried from that point.
And I mean, it was Scotty Barnes did play in the NC State game. I think that is one of the few differences between the two games, but you know, he did play in that game. He played what, 13 minutes, I think. And because he rolled his ankle in the game, when he was playing, he was effective, had a real nice offensive rebound slam, had a couple of Dr. J-esque moves, holding the ball up, you know, high above the mere mortals down on the ground trying to knock it away. But did you notice anything different about the way the offense was moving with Raekwon Evans being more of the facilitator, or was it just that, hey, you know what, if we make 70% of our shots, including, and 70% of our threes, then we'll just go ahead and, you know, hang up the Final Four banner right now.
Yeah. We should probably hold off on that for at least one more game. But Raekwon Evans, you know, that kid likes to go downhill. He reminds me, you know, a little bit of some of the older point guards that we've had in the past, you know, where they turn the corner and they go downhill, and that has not really been Scottie Barnes' strength. He's shown signs of that. And so I think that having that element to the offense really kind of opens things up, and Raekwon Gray has the same ability, you know, to get downhill. He's developed that nice little floater this year, so he stops getting called for so many offensive fouls. And it seems like with all good, really good Leonard Hamilton teams, there's a game somewhere in the middle of the season where everything just sort of clicks and the team sort of develops its identity, the identity that the coaches have been trying to instill. And it's, you know, with COVID season and not that many games, maybe it's too early to say that NC State was that game, but it certainly seemed that way, especially the way we came out against North Carolina, where we were just much better getting downhill. And that, if you're going to have a great shooting team, and Florida State's the best 3-point shooting team in the conference, you have to have guys that play downhill. You have to have guys who get their teammates open. And we haven't shown that ability through, you know, up until the NC State game, at least not consistently. So I think the one big takeaway on offense is that just doing a much better job of playing downhill and knowing the coaches. I know that they've been preaching that, you know, day in and day out in practice.
And maybe I know we have some folks that are switching over from football season now. And when you know, in football, you hear people talk about, you know, playing downhill. It's more like in the running back sense, where a guy, you know, you want him to get behind his pads and, you know, keep the legs churning and really just fall forward and kind of play downhill. Maybe like think of a Derrick Henry type. In basketball, what are you saying? Like, when you're saying Raekwon Evans does a nice job of playing downhill within the offense, give an example of what you mean by that.
Yeah. What you'll see is a lot of times he'll be coming off a screen, you know, kind of at the top of the key or something. And the key point is to get your shoulder past your defender, and so that you can really drive towards the basket. And what that causes, you know, the defense has to collapse around that player, because otherwise it's just going to be an uncontested layup. And that opens up all sorts of possibilities for the offense. And when you don't have that, you see a lot of just sort of aimless swinging the ball around the perimeter, you know, with no real advantage for the offensive team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we certainly saw a number of kickouts in both the NC State and UNC game. I mean, it's nice when they mostly fall, you know, when you're kicking out to a guy standing 4 feet behind the 3-point line and he's draining it. Pretty much everyone was. So that's nice. I do like what I've seen from Raekwon Evans. And you know, what's interesting to me is that I think this actually started before Scottie Barnes, you know, twisted his ankle, which gives me hope that it's not something that's a result of like, oh, well, you've removed someone from the offense and now all of a sudden it flows better. I think it was, we started to see this with Raekwon Evans. I feel like we talked about it after the Gardner-Webb game, even a little bit in the Clemson game. It, you know, and Hamilton has been very candid on a couple of occasions that the incident with Keontae Johnson in the UF game really impacted Raekwon Evans more than some. He had a situation, you know, earlier in his life where he watched someone have a similar incident and pass away from it. So it impacted him, and rightly so. I feel like he looks in a better place emotionally, physically, mentally into the game now. And we've seen that for 4, 5, 6 games. Do you see the same thing?
Yeah. And the beginning of your point there about it's not removing Scottie Barnes from the offense that made this thing happen. You know, Barnes and Evans and Gray, they all can play together on the floor at the same time. And Barnes is another person who can play downhill when he really gets his mind right.
Yeah. We saw that in the Georgia Tech game pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. And we've seen flashes of it through most of the games, and now he's had a chance to sit there and ride the bike and watch the whole team do it. But yeah, Raekwon Evans, you know, and I think we probably talked about this in the preseason. You know, if you look at the bench players, who's really key coming off the bench, and Raekwon Evans is probably that guy, because we have to have somebody who can be a backup point guard. And early on in the season, he was struggling for reasons that you've discussed. And now it seems like he's really settling into what his role on this team is going to be.
Yeah, I remember talking, must have been right around the Indiana game, and we had won games, but I mean, you and I think we're very concerned that, wow, the bench is not giving us the kind of lift that it had in previous years. And, you know, we had some, I think I wrote an article right around New Year's that tossed out some numbers in terms of we were, you know, in the bottom quartile of actually bench minutes and bench performance. But and I don't want to sit there and say that all of a sudden we have 2019 level depth, but you know, Raekwon Evans, whether he's a starter or coming off the bench, and or you know, Scotty came off the bench against NC State, they've stepped up. Malik Osborne, and maybe this will transition us into the UNC game, but he has started to look a little bit more impactful, more effective. Nate Jack, even if it was only a one game thing, he stepped up and really provided a lift participated in that 3-point fest against NC State. So it has been nice to see that the bench is showing signs of becoming more of a factor. Tenor and Gom is another person there. So maybe we'll switch into the UNC game then. And so that was a game played completely without Scotty Barnes, and Florida State was a 4-point favorite before it was announced that he was going to be out. I think it might've slipped a half a point or point before, you know, right before the game, but you know, by all accounts, UNC played well. I've seen a couple of the games. That's one of the better games they've played. It was certainly one of the better shooting the best shooting performance they've had of the year, largely by Caleb Love. If you remove his out of the ordinary performance, they've kind of performed as expected. And Florida State still really controlled throughout the game. UNC had a little 1 or 2 point lead there at one point, but Florida State really had a 6 to 10 point working margin for much of the game. And you know, did what a good team should do, which is close it out at the free throw line.
Yeah, and everybody, you know, going back to that NC State game where you're talking about the bench, you know, everybody came off the bench and played well. And against North Carolina, it was really Malik Osborne that came off the bench and played well. So that is one, when you're talking trends, that's one trend that we saw. The thing that's really struck me about the North Carolina game is that we always talk about basketball being a game of runs, but it was crazy. I mean, just North Carolina started with one, and then we made one, and then they made one, and then we made one for the whole time until, you know, the 40 minutes was up, and we're actually I think they cut it to 1 point with about 3 minutes, and I was like, well, now it's our turn to make a run. And
yeah,
that's pretty much what happened. Game was over.
Yeah. And you know what they didn't do, and talked a little bit about this with Ari Masudi, we had on, I think an episode ago or two, but what they didn't do, which is what Florida State has been able to do in the last few years with Trent Forrest at the helm, North Carolina never in the second half came back and took the lead. And some of that I think is because they have a freshman point guard of their own. They had a couple of opportunities to take the lead and didn't get it done. Some of that is a tribute to, in my mind, I thought Raekwon Gray and Bolsha Koprivica and even MJ Walker, who doesn't normally get on the boards, they did a tremendous job on the defensive glass of making sure that, hey, it seems like North Carolina is getting a little momentum here. We can't let them just eat up second chance opportunities. And then again, you got a guy like Raekwon Gray or MJ who would do the thing that Trent Forrest always did, which is say, hey, we've got to make a 7-1 run be a 7-1 run. And earlier in the season, we saw teams like UCF and Georgia Tech go on 15 to 16 point runs. I think Georgia Tech might have gone like an 18-0 run or something like that, even though we won the game. for the first time this year, someone stepped up in the manner that Trent Forrest used to step up when it got to be a 7-1 run, an 8-2 run, and said, give me the ball. I'm getting the free throw line. I'm getting to the bucket, and the run stops now. And I think that allowed, to your point, Florida State to kind of make that a game of runs as opposed to a game that got away. And now we're talking about, well, UNC just went on that big run in the second half and we couldn't, you know, counter it.
Yeah. The only real big run they had was at the end of the first half where they went on a 10-0 run. And then Florida State scored the final 6 points of the half and probably should have scored the final 8 points, but I don't know how well Sadar Calhoun knew how much time was on the clock when he stole the inbounds pass right there at the end of the half. But yeah, that's exactly to your point. The biggest run that they went on, we immediately responded with 6 quick points right at the half to take the lead.
Yeah, they closed both halves really well. And you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of Florida State basketball with Trent Forrest at the helm, was closing halves well. And if you can make your runs, just if you're going on a 6-1 run and the other team is a 4-0 run, and then you go on a 9-2 run, and then the other team is a 6-2 run, like over the course of the game, you just see that working margin, you know, get a little bit bigger. And that's the name of the game in ACC basketball, at least in games when you are not making 75% of your shots from the field.
Yeah, and the only other point I would add to the North Carolina game is something that you touched on kind of at the beginning of when we first started talking about this game, is that they shot the ball well and they turned it over 14 times, which is not a ton for them. And so, you know, when we're looking at playing them again later in the year, they did two things really well, which they don't typically do well at all, and they still got beat by 7. You know, not saying that Florida State's going to shoot 50% from deep next time, but you know, we only took 16, so it wasn't that big a deal. Or that we're going to make 26 to 27 free throws, but North Carolina played a game that was out of their comfort zone, and at least for now, it was much better than they would be expected to play, and they still got beat by 7.
Yeah, and you mentioned the free throws. Hey, fantastic. At one point, I think as a team, Florida State had made something like 26 in a row or something like that, or 24 in a row when you go back to the NC State game. Obviously that is doing some work. I was more impressed by the fact that we went to the line 26 or 27 times. I mean, even if we, okay, let's say, Raekwon only goes 6 of 7 instead of 7 for 7. And, you know, MJ maybe misses one earlier in the game. You know, if you're going to go 23 of 27, I mean, that's really doing some work. And I feel like to me, that is a more repeatable skill. Just like you said, playing downhill and getting to the line. I don't know that we'll get there 27 times or 26 times in the Dean Dome. I don't know. Maybe I'm just cynical, but I feel like that number becomes more like 16 or 18 in the Dean Dome. But it's just I think it's an indicator of how the team is playing downhill. And I've really appreciated Raekwon Gray, if we can just talk about him for a minute. Bolsa played a really nice game against some big time bigs, and he held his own on the boards and really impacted, I thought, on both sides. You saw where he could still add some strength, but there were some times there where Bolsa kind of took over for a few minutes. But Raekwon Gray played a next level type of game. People have liked to compare him to Draymond Green in the past. Raekwon Gray looked like Draymond Green on the court against North Carolina. I mean, you're talking about 19 points on, I don't know, 10 shots, maybe 5 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 blocks or 3 steals and a block. That is NBA level basketball being played by Raekwon Gray. And that is a really nice sign to see.
Yeah, I actually saw him listed in the second round of a mock draft. So some other folks besides just us are starting to pay attention. And you were talking about free throws. Raekwon Gray went to the line more than any other Knoll yesterday. He went line 7 times. And, you know, North Carolina kind of has the defense that will allow that to happen because they've got those 3 guys who are all 6'10", 6'11", Plus Walker Kessler even played some, and he's, you know, he's like 7'1" or something. And so it's big enough guys who are going to try to challenge him at the rim, as opposed to just grab their nuts and step in front of them and take a charge. And so he was able to get to the line 7 times. He made all 7. And that's one part of his game where he has been really, really good this year, but getting to the line has not necessarily been his strength. And so to see him go 7 times and lead the team, that was pretty impressive. And, you know, but if you look at the number of fouls he's drawing per 40 minutes, it's still, you know, still not that high. And so hopefully that this will, you know, give him a little more of a blueprint on, you know, exactly how he can be combining his driving ability plus that little floater, you know, plus his ability to finish at the rim through contact, you know, kind of wrap all those pieces together and become a guy who does get to the line a little bit more.
The little floater was nice. I mean, we've seen that in flashes, but that was nice. And I mean, it was almost, he almost kind of played a Scotty Barnes type of game. You know, I mean, he was switching on defense and bringing the ball up the court at times. I don't know. It was just really impressive basketball from the big man. And, you know, there's not going to be a lot of teams who have someone who, especially if, to your point, he does keep playing downhill and getting to the line more, you have to either defend him with someone who's maybe 6'5", 6'6", but a little quicker, who could stay in front of him, because he has a remarkably quick first step for someone of his size, but then he can kind of bully him into the lane and get finish at the rim through contact. Or, you know, do you try to body him with someone, you know, the size of De'Ron Sharpe, but he's just too quick for that and blows right by. And so I think teams are going to have to start to really question who are we going to be putting on him out there?
Yeah. And if you look at the stats right now, he's the 5th leading scorer at Florida State, but he leads the team in steals. He's 2nd in rebounds. He's 2nd in assists. He's 2nd in blocks. You know, this is a guy who's just, he is all over the court. He's filling up the stat sheet. He's the proverbial stat stuffer. And if he, you know, can add just a little bit more to that offensive arsenal, then look out. This guy is going to be, he could be, looking ahead to March, this could be the guy that it's like his development is, you know, what is going to enable Florida State to make a run in March. Or, you know, we may very well be talking about that in a few months.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, if you think back to Terrence Mann's junior year, before Terrence became a legitimate three-point threat, and I'm not saying that Raekwon isn't a legit, I mean, he has to be at least somewhat guarded out on the three-point line, but I don't think anybody's coming in focusing on, I mean, I think people would rather have him taking a three-point shot than they would have him getting downhill into the paint or hitting that floater. But he's starting to remind me of the type of player of Terrence Mann from his junior year, when you could see Terrence start to put it all together. Obviously, Raekwon Gray's got, 2.5 inches and we'll be generous and say 40 pounds on him. But it's just starting to remind me of that kind of all around game that makes for an outstanding second round draft pick.
Yeah, Terrence Mann was a 25% three-point shooter as a junior, which is right where Raekwon is for his career, you know. And then he blossomed up to almost 40% that senior year. So, yeah, I like that comparison. They're both similar sized, although Raekwon's a little rounder. But otherwise, it's a good comparison. Though Terrence Mann came to Florida State, you know, much more highly regarded. And Raekwon Gray has been a development project from the get-go.
And to be fair, I mean, so he's put in the hard work. He is also, is he a redshirt junior, or am I misremembering that?
I'm remembering him as a redshirt junior.
Yeah. So I think there's that. I mean, Terrence played from the freshman year. So to your point about Terrence coming in with a little bit more higher regarded, we're comparing Terrence's 3rd year to Raekwon's 4th year. But hey, you know, that doesn't matter. Get to the league, you know. So
yep.
The work has clearly been put in, and Raekwon is starting to see the results pay off. And I think the team is better for it. And you know, you think about him making a similar jump from the 3-point. If Raekwon Gray comes back next year, makes a jump like Terrence Mann or Trent Forrest or others have before him from the 3-point line, now you're talking about a bona fide, NBA, first round potential pick.
Yeah, I'm just refreshing myself by looking at his bio, and he was a member of the Green Vipers that first year that he was at Florida State. So
yeah,
yeah, it's come a long way.
He came in, if I recall, needing to drop a few M&Ms or Mickey D's burgers to be able to really have the conditioning level to play at the ACC. Okay, so real quick, so we. I feel like that's good. We did about 20 to 25 minutes on the two games combined. Always great to beat up on a couple of teams from Tobacco Road. There was another significant piece of news that happened in this last few weeks here that we haven't podded or podcasted, and that is the addition of a pretty big time scoring guard, Caleb Mills. From Houston, if those didn't see, Florida State had an available scholarship. Caleb Mills is somebody that they had been involved with out of high school. He had a strong first year at Houston, had started the second year. There were some challenges there, you know, whatever, things weren't working out for him. And Caleb Mills was it was a pretty highly sought after player on the transfer market. And he is transferring to Florida State. With what we believe is the intention to get healthy, make it through this COVID year, and then have 3 years to play beginning next year. Tell me a little bit about Caleb Mills.
Yeah, we're about to see in Louisville's Carlick Jones the best, you know, transfer on the market. And when we're talking this time next year, people might be talking about Caleb Mills being one of the best. You know, not that he's going to put up the numbers in Florida State system, but. This is a kid. If you watched Houston play last year, it was almost like watching the Ja Morant teams from Murray State, where he just always had the ball in his hand. He took like 36% of the shots or something when he was on the floor. I mean, and that was as a freshman, and he had a really good season. He was the preseason conference player of the year this year, and then he got hurt and was only able to play a handful of games for Houston. But I think that if Ham can get him to buy into the system, this is a player who has the potential to be really good at Florida State. And the element that he brings is, you know, we're always asking, well, who's going to take the shot, you know, the final shot of the half or the final shot of the game, or
there's 10 seconds left on the shot clock, who's going to break down the D?
Yeah, and against Virginia, we can't get anything going. Where's Dwayne Bacon going one-on-one? And this is that guy. This is the ultimate sort of one-on-one scoring player that Florida State would – I would love to have him on the team right now because, you know, Florida State just doesn't really recruit that type of player, or at least they don't land them successfully. And so to add him to this incoming freshman class, which is all world, is a really exciting pickup for Florida State, and for casual fans who are out there and they're like, well, he's from Houston. How good can he be? Houston's a top 10 team in the country right now. So we're getting the best player off a top 10 team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love it. I really, really like it. And you know, at first there was some thought of, oh my gosh, is this guy getting it with this every kind of transfer waiver thing in this year, you know, is this guy going to be eligible right now? Cause you're right. I mean, I would love a guy like this on this year's team, but I do think that there are, you know, we've seen guys have to come in and learn our defensive systems a bit. And he is better right now, I think, on the offensive side of the ball than he is defensively. And so, I actually love in a year when so much is uncertain and you know, you don't even know if you're going to play the next game, I actually love the move to let him get healthy, let him, hey, no pressure, learn the systems, watch, become part of our culture, become part of the selfless, you know, 13 or 18 strong culture and get ready to really, I think, be the perfect complement for a guy like Jalen Worley next year, you know, who is more of the Jalen Brunson type of kind of pure point guard, not pure point guard, but just that manage the game, see the game, make the right play. And then you've got, like you said, Caleb Mills, that it's just, you know, get out of the way, either kick out threes or get out of the way and let them take someone off the bounce.
Yeah, it's possible next year that our starting lineup could be four seniors and a junior. You know, so this is a great opportunity to be bringing in very highly rated freshmen as well as a, you know, top recruit like Caleb Mills.
Yeah, so we'll have to do more. I mean, again, he's not going to be participating in this season right here. So, but we'll have to do more, you know, as we get towards the end of the year and over the summer. Really, maybe see if we can get some film, get Kevin on, Kevin Little, maybe break down some of his game. But if you haven't, I mean, you can go online and find, you know, type in Caleb Mills highlight tape from Houston. I mean, he put up a pretty good reel his freshman year, and so certainly caught the attention of a number of programs and NBA scouts alike. All right, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we will do we'll have a segment of one on one and one, which is we debuted that last time where I ask you a one and one question, kind of a this or that, and then we will preview the big matchup with the old Metro Conference rival, the Louisville Cardinals. Okay, and we are back. Paid some bills, and we are ready to talk a little more basketball and get into the Louisville game in a bit. But first, let's do another segment of one and one. So Michael, you know, if you remember last time, I'm going to ask you just kind of a series of questions, and you have to provide answers respectively based on those questions. We have to talk. That's basically how it works. We have to have a conversation.
It's a good thing we both have microphones. Let's
All right.
do
All right.
this.
So, tell me one thing from these past two games that you hope to continue seeing, and one thing that you would like to see stop.
Well, so we can't miss from 3-point line. That's kind of an easy one. We're shot 59% from deep in the last two games. So I'd like to continue to see that going. And what I would like to see stop is the silly turnovers, just too many, especially facing a team like Louisville.
All right. Speaking of maybe Louisville, and this is a little preview of the preview, but tell me one player on Louisville that concerns you, and one player for Florida State that you think can exploit a matchup against Louisville.
Carlique Jones for sure against as the player that concerns me. He's 6'1". He is probably the most confident guy we're going to play this year. He's a transfer, and he can score on anybody. He scores in bunches. Don't focus on the fact that he's from Radford. The dude can play. The flip side of that is we have all sorts of guards who can take advantage of Carlique Jones. Their system, you know, they run a defensive system similar to Virginia, makes it kind of hard to exploit guys one-on-one, but we've played Virginia and Louisville so many times over the past few years that Ham will figure out a way.
All right. What about one result from the last week? This can be ACC or not, but one result that really shocked you, and one result that maybe shocked other people, or, you know, you think other people were thinking it was an upset, but did not surprise you at all.
The shocker would be Louisville lose. I didn't even really consider that they might lose to Miami. And they went to Miami last night and lost. So when we face them, you know, we're actually going to be facing a team that's coming off a loss. And then the one that shouldn't surprise people is Michigan, which was, what were they, like fifth or sixth in the country.
Right.
They had not lost a game this year and just got totally waxed by Minnesota. It's not that Michigan isn't a good team, it's just that Minnesota is probably the best, you know, lower ranked or unranked team in the country.
I will. That is true. Minnesota, I've caught them probably maybe 2.5 games, and they are impressive. I'm not sure exactly where that came from. I don't know that I had them as a top 15 or so team on my radar coming in, but they have a lot of pieces. So remember Minnesota, folks, when you're filling out your March brackets. Okay, so tell me one player from the ACC. That if you could add to Florida State, you would, and one player from outside the ACC that you would like to add to Florida State if you could.
I don't know if I can take Justin Champagne because of the injury, but that's who I'm taking. The guy can just do everything for Pittsburgh, and if we had, you know, he fits right in at Florida State, 6'6", 200 pounds. You know, can just do it all. He is back now, so I guess he only missed a couple games.
He dominated Syracuse yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Right. He scored, what, 24 points and 16 rebounds or something. That's a nice stat line to have. And the guy I would like to have is Luka Garza. I mean, he's not just because he's going to win the National Player of the Year, but I would love to see Ham and Stan Jones get a guy who's like a legitimate National Player of the Year player in the post and see what they can do with that player's development.
All right. We'll do one more here, but Justin Champagne is honestly maybe the best player in the ACC. He's legit. Tell me one game that you are looking forward to see this week besides the Florida State Louisville game. And one game that maybe people are going to, I don't know, hype up or whatnot. And I guess it doesn't have to be this coming week, but in the near week or two that you think will not live, you know, be a dud.
Yeah, I forget how you worded the question, but I want to see Tennessee, Florida. Florida is kind of been back and forth since we played them. We really need them to be a great win for us. And the chance to knock off Tennessee at Florida would be great. The matchup that I think is probably not going to be that great is Kansas Baylor. Hopefully I'm wrong because this has a chance to be a super high level game, but Baylor also has the ability to beat Kansas by like 25. So we shall see.
Yeah. Yeah, that I think you're right about that. I guess, you know, you never know what 3-point lottery is going to do, but I think Baylor is a much better team than Kansas this year. I will throw out too. I don't exactly know when they play, but I'm not feeling UNC Duke this year. I mean, I feel like it's, you know, you always want to watch it, but I don't know. Duke hasn't impressed me much, and if North Carolina doesn't make 10 threes like they did against us, I mean, that has the potential to be a real, even if it's close, to be a real, I don't know, not an aesthetically pleasing game to watch.
Yeah, and Duke just doesn't have – Duke normally has guys that are just fun to watch, and this year's team is just, they're kind of not really all there.
I feel like we would have put a hurt on them had they come down. I know that maybe we're playing a bit differently now than we were back in late December, but they also weren't playing at that point. I think they had not played for three or four weeks at that point. I think they would have suffered a pretty big loss to us, and that is always nice to give to Coach K and the Dukies. But maybe we'll catch them in the ACC tournament. All right, so moving on to the big Monday matchup. It's on ESPN, second straight game on ESPN1, I guess, if you will, for Florida State. So that's always nice to showcase the team. It is at the Yum Center, 7 p.m. And as you know, we had a couple of outstanding games against Louisville last year. I think actually you mentioned earlier that every year it seems like there's a game kind of midway through the year where the thing, you know, everything starts to click for Florida State. For me, last year, that was the first game against Louisville, the road game, where I feel like at that point we were still kind of trying to figure out who we are. MJ Walker was not even expected to play in that game. He had been hurt. He comes out and we kind of blitz them from the first half and really took it to a good Louisville team on the road for the first of our two victories against the Cardinals last year. What are the Cardinals looking like this year? I know you mentioned the shocking loss to Miami. Besides that, what are they looking like?
They only have one other loss, and that was they got totally stomped by Wisconsin, which is nothing to be ashamed of. They haven't played a ton of good teams. They played Kentucky, who's obviously down. They played Seton Hall, who's decent. They haven't played like Virginia or anybody yet in the ACC. So this will be the toughest test that they've had this year. And like I said, I was surprised coming off that, seeing them get beat by Miami. So I would expect them to come out a little more focused than they were on the road. Both teams are facing quick turnarounds. And the game also is right before that Kansas Baylor game that I just talked about. So they're going to be ramping that up the whole time during our game.
Yes, you will undoubtedly hear that game mentioned quite a few times. I agree with you that they really just haven't played a whole. I mean, they're 9-2, but when you start to look for the heft, you know, Kentucky just isn't that good this year. I believe they played Pittsburgh and beat them without Champagne. Although I guess why guess on that if I can verify. He did not play in that game. So they beat Pitt without arguably the best player in the conference. And they got Virginia Tech at home, nipped them by two, and VT on the road is a lot different than VT in Castle Coliseum. So I don't know what to make of Louisville. I know they always have athletes, you know, that is, you know, kind of like Florida State, something that they always have a plethora of. David Johnson is a big, I mean, he would fit in with big guard U, right? He is a big, strong, physical guard. We saw him last year. And they do things well when you look at the numbers, right? They get to the free throw line, or excuse me, they make free throws themselves, and kind of don't send the other teams to the free throw line too much. They, you know, they're okay 3-point shooting. They've been pretty good. I don't know. I haven't seen them I haven't like watched a lot of actual film, but they've been pretty good at keeping other teams from going off from the 3-point line. They're pretty good, like solid at, you know, defensive field goal percentage. But I don't know that there's something that you can say, like, is their calling card that this is an excellent, you know, UNC, they were the number one offensive rebounding team in the country. Clemson before yesterday's game against UVA was the number one defensive team in the country. I just don't know what Louisville is elite at.
Yeah, you know, they're kind of one of these teams that's not elite at anything. If you look at their defense, they, you know, they run a pack line defense very similar to Virginia's, and so the possessions tend to be down in Louisville games, although their offense runs pretty fast to make up for it, you know. But this will be probably a, you know, 65-67 possession game, something like that, and so. You know, the real key to beating Louisville is to not let them set up their defense. Well, you know, which means that Florida State needs to be forcing turnovers. They need to be running on long rebounds. They need to be running even maybe off made baskets. You know, looking for some quick hitters. You know, because their defense is solid. You know, but like you said, it's not elite. But it becomes really good as the shot clock goes on. So you don't want to be, you know, running 25 second possessions against them, or you're really not going to be scoring. And then offensively, it's, you know, they got two guys. They got Carlick Jones and David Johnson, and those guys are going to want to have big games. And our guys are obviously going to want to stop them. And whether or not we're talking about a win or a loss, I think is going to come down to how well can we contain Carlick Jones, and does David Johnson have one of his, you know, one of those games that he's capable of, or are we able to, you know, hold him, you know, relatively in check? He has, and I'm talking about David Johnson here. He hasn't been playing great lately. He only scored 5 points in Miami. He only scored 5 points against Wake Forest. But if you look back before that, you know, he was playing really good basketball. So hopefully we can extend his little misery streak here and come away with the win.
Yeah, I hope so. Although I'll be honest, and just generally speaking, and I would think this of a Florida State player too, but when a guy's been struggling a little bit, particularly they played at Wake, at Miami, to me coming home against a big time opponent on national television is typically the kind of game where I see guys bust out of slumps. I mean, David Johnson is an NBA prospect for a reason. He showed flashes of being, you know, first team all ACC type of guy last year. And so I don't know that I'm counting on that slump to continue. It just feels like the type of game where guys sort of bust out of a slump and they've got that energy going, the juice, and they're at home and they just, you know, they put it together. I am with you in that I think Carlick Jones is is going to be the determining factor of Florida State, you know, coming out of the Yum Center once again with a win or not. It's interesting because he is, you know, he's the transfer, as you said, came from Radford. He's only 6'1". Now he's, you know, thick. He's not a scrawny guy, but he's only 6'1". And those kinds of guards have, it can go both ways. We've seen Florida State in the past be able to really bother those smaller guards with our length and just throwing waves of bodies at a guy of that size and putting MJ on him for a bit and Polite on him for a bit and just really just switching everything and bottling up his passing lanes. We've also seen it to where we just don't have someone quick enough to stay in front of a smaller guard like that. We've seen that against UF in the past when they had Casey Hill, and we've seen that a couple of times in the past few years against a UVA or a Notre Dame, and we just haven't had someone to be able to stay in front. And so it's going to be, I'm really interested to see, are we able to bother him with our length? I don't even know. We have a 6'1 guy that's going to be playing against Carly Jones. Or is he going to be able to get into the lane, break down the D with dribble penetration, you know, and really get to the free throw line or find people for lobs and kickouts?
Yeah, our walk-ons are bigger than 6'1", so we don't really have anybody. You know, one thing that we saw against North Carolina is that Ham snuck in that couple of possessions of zone there in the second half, and I'll be interesting if that was a preview of maybe we'll see, you know, 20 possessions or something against Louisville. It's one way to try to stop someone like Carly Jones. And then, you know, the other thing that we've seen typically in the past is that when we play a team like Gardner Webb or North Florida, where their entire team is small and has the ability to blow by us, we run into a ton of troubles. But when we play a team like Miami that only has one guy who can do that, then we can do a little better job containing them. So I think the fact that Louisville, aside from Carly Jones, is a pretty big team, works in our favor. It allows the coaches a little more flexibility in how they're going to scheme this game, and I'll be fascinated to watch how we defend them.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, the guy down at Miami he's also extremely inefficient. I would be furious if I was coaching him and see all the like get into the paint, step back, long twos that the dude takes. So I think Carly Jones is just a flat out better player than Likes. But to your point, we've been able to handle teams that just have one guy that we can kind of focus on and keep the attention, as opposed to, like you said, some of these, you know, mid and small majors that, you know, Bolsha can't even play in the game because the guys come up to his waist. The other thing that's interesting to me about Jones is that his minutes, man. And I know he's kind of used to this from doing it. It was Radford in the Big South, I think. But he's sort of used to that and had to play a lot of minutes there. But playing a lot of minutes in the Big South is not playing a lot of minutes in the ACC and playing minutes against teams like Florida State that are going to, again, throw waves of bodies at you. My guess is you will see 10 Florida State players play in the game before – let's say the under 12. So when you look at his minutes, we're talking about a guy, which by the way, he didn't play in the Wisconsin game. You mentioned that's the only other loss besides Miami, which to me felt like a clear look ahead game. They've got their rival, the team that sort of embarrassed them last year, coming up at home on Big Monday. I think it was a clear look ahead game and they just got caught with their pants down. But the only other loss, Wisconsin, well, Carly Jones didn't play. But since then, you know, he did 37 minutes against Pittsburgh, 38 minutes against Kentucky, 38 minutes against Boston College, 38 minutes against Virginia Tech, 37 minutes against Wake Forest. By the way, he's taking, you know, 10 plus shots in all these games. And then 40, the full 40 against Miami yesterday. So this dude is logging minutes, and I'm wondering too if Florida State can withstand the early push that's going to come from a home team playing on Big Monday. Can they maybe start to wear down Carly Jones?
Yeah, that 40 minute figure is staggering. I mean, what coaches do that these days? You know, keep a player in for 40 minutes,
He played 40
especially.
against Seton Hall too.
Yeah, and they lost to Miami. He played 40. But again, that's kind of the position that Coach Mack is in. He's got Johnson, and he's got Carly Jones, and it's not to say that Louisville isn't talented. I mean, they've got seven blue chip recruits on the roster, including a five star and Williamson. So they've got plenty of talent, Samuel Williamson. They've got plenty of talent, but it's not the kind of polished talent that you need to win games. And so at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if Carlick Jones and David Johnson both play more than, like 37, 38 minutes. And that's just kind of the road that Louisville has to hoe at this point.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I would be actually probably more surprised if Jones plays, let's call it, less than 37, than I will if he plays, 38 or 39. Absent, of course, if he picks up, three fouls in the first 5 minutes, which, hey, then I feel a lot better about our chances of winning. So, we'll kind of get to the predictions here then. So, we know Florida State is playing well. They're shooting well. They're shooting well at the Tuck. I want to remind, we've played one road game this year, and we lost to Clemson in that one road game. Leonard Hamilton teams have historically really kind of picked apart the Pac line. Florida State has had ample success against Chris Mack. I mean, Leonard Hamilton has just really owned him since the game against Xavier in the NCAA tournament a few years ago. And honestly, when you go back and I mean, not a lot of teams have beaten Virginia in the last few years, but Florida State has beaten Virginia more frequently since they've turned into an elite program than most other teams have, including being the last team to beat their national title winning team. So no stranger to success against the Pac line, but on the road, quick turnaround. We don't even know if Scotty's going to play. MJ's kind of nicked up. What are your thoughts on this game, Michael? Give me a prediction.
Well, I think if Scotty Barnes is playing, I'm pretty bullish on this team, and I can't recall the last time that we played Chris Mack and didn't score more than a point per possession. So offensively, especially the way that we're playing right now, I would expect that we're going to be just fine. And if we have Scotty Barnes, then we're going to be better than fine. So I'm going to take a win regardless. I'll take a 3-point win, like 77, 74. Without Scotty Barnes, and like 6-point win with him.
All right. I like it. I like it. I yesterday walking out of the Tuck, I was kind of thinking a loss. I kind of thought to myself, well, that's okay. Good. We got to 7-2. That was big. Maybe take a loss at Louisville, bounce back with a couple wins, take a loss up at Castle Coliseum in a week or two. And then see where we are right at that point, maybe be 11-4 or something. But I don't know. Looking at them against Miami, seeing the fact that Carlick Jones did play the full 40 and he's got to be playing on this short rest. And their game was even later than ours. And honestly, I think guys like MJ Walker, Anthony Polite, Raekwon Gray, they tasted the success against Louisville last year. Raekwon Evans had a big game against Louisville at home. So I think they're comfortable with the guys they're going up against, with maybe the exception of Jones. And I trust Hamilton enough to put together something to just slow him down. So I think Scotty maybe plays, actually. I kind of feel like maybe they wanted to see if they could get a home win against UNC without him, give him an extra 36 hours of rest. And I will say that we let's see. I like your 65 possessions. So I'll say that it's a 75-69 FSU win. So all right, a couple of wins on the board. That'll be fun. We'll come back, and I don't know if we can do instant or not since it's a 7 p.m. game, but we'll definitely come back and talk about the UL game regardless, win or lose. And we've got Clemson coming up after that, the big rematch with Clemson next Saturday. So a lot to talk about in the coming weeks. It was good to talk to you again. Happy 2021, Michael.
Yeah, always fun talking to you, and let's do it a little sooner next time.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon.